Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Mark Lesser, and I am about to have a very productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's me, Mike Vardy, and on this episode, I'm joined by Mark Lesser. He's a CEO, an executive coach, and a Zen teacher. He is also the author of the book that we're going to dive into today, Finding Clarity. I'm really excited to have this conversation because I believe clarity, you know, is one of the biggest things you need to lead a productive lifestyle. Now, Mark's got credentials that speak volumes. He founded and was CEO of three companies, has an MBA degree from New York University, and Finding Clarity is his fifth book. Mark also helped develop the Search Inside Yourself program within Google. It's a mindfulness-based emotional intelligence training for leaders, and that's spread through Silicon Valley and then globally. And Mark was a resident of the San Francisco Zen Center for 10 years. If you know anything about that place or done any research, you know that that is a prestigious place to be. I'm really excited that I was able to have this conversation with Mark today. We talked about clarity, of course, unconventional anchors that can help you find clarity, the role the ego plays in good-heartedness, the trap that people fall into, breakdowns into breakthroughs, the idea of doing that, so much more. Let's get into this conversation now with Mark Lesser here on A Productive Conversation. Enjoy. Mark, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today and have a very productive conversation.
Yeah, I like, you know, we were just chatting a little bit about, productivity and this combination, I think, of, I was just writing a little bit about scale and depth and how, scale can often be chasing those shiny objects.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we love those shiny objects and they're beautiful, you know, but there is something about depth, and we do need both, And it's interesting. And it's one of the things I think about a lot.
Well, you can scale wide and you can scale deep, right? Like, I think that's it. And I think a lot of people focus on the wide as opposed to the depth, right? Which is, and as I look at your book, which I have in my hands, Finding Clarity, I think that's a jumping off point for a lot of this going deep, because there's this, clarity and awareness perspective, like all those things which are kind of soft skills that we maybe don't take as much time to get into, can really help us, you know, improve our relationship with time, cultivate a state of productiveness. So when it comes to finding clarity, like, what led you down the path of saying, this is an area that I want to explore, that I want to go deep on?
Yeah. You know, it started out as writing about, I was writing about accountability and compassion and accountability. And someone said to me, what is this? What are you really writing about? What's the real upshot of accountability with compassion? And I said, it's really about finding clarity, and that, our language has real limitations. Clarity in a way is like a combination of many things, right? It's not just scale and it's not just depth. It's not, clarity also includes mystery, includes what we're not clear about, what we don't know. It's aspirational, right? You might be clear right now, but how about now in this next moment?
It's true. Like,
things change. Things do change. You know, we yeah, what transitions am I in? What do I feel solid about right now? And what's transitioning in my life? You know, what, so all of that, I think I take this kind of wide perspective on this aspirational view of what clarity is.
You know, it's something that I find people struggle with, in that, not that they don't desire clarity, it's the ability to sit with it. Mm-hmm. It's the ability, because we live in a world that's about move forward progress, right? It's about, we can't just, and to me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, clarity isn't like, if you're in motion, well, it's like anything else. Like, I was on a train from Lisbon to Porto with my wife a few weeks ago, as we're recording this, and clarity was not something that I could necessarily have looking at the window, because we were in motion. So how does someone who wants to find clarity reconcile the fact that they, in order to find it, and they have to stay with it to a degree?
Yeah. This is the great paradox, I think, of clarity, is that the practice is noticing the gaps between, you know, where you are and what you want to be clear about. Right. And that is, I think, almost by definition, not so comfortable. Right. So right. there is some discomfort, and how do you stay with that discomfort and neither avoid it, neither push it away or pretend it's not there or get all, you know, emotional about it? How do you actually stay with it? And this, to me, you know, there's a, you know, this is one of, there's a 30-year-old book, or at least 30 years old, called The Fifth Discipline, mm-hmm. by Peter Senge. And I remember coming across this line that I highlighted, you know, where he says, the most important quality of a leader might be not avoiding the discomfort between the gaps of what is and what we are aspiring to be or aspiring to do. I thought this was a beautiful, this really stayed with me about, you know, again, whether it's leadership, growing businesses, entrepreneurship, or even relationships, our personal relationships, like what is, right? What is, and what needs tending to, what needs development in all parts of our lives. And to me, this is the practice, right? The practice of finding clarity is noticing the gaps between those things.
Well, and to your point, I mean, you mentioned the word practice. It's very similar to things like meditation, journaling, all of those, exercise, any of those. Is the practice is the progress. It's the process. It's all that, as opposed to, I think people really want to be able to check off a box. I meditated, check, I exercised. But there, you're not done. Like, there's no being done, right?
Yeah, right. I'm clear, right? Like, I always love, you know, I've done a lot of different trainings and workshops in my life, you know, and often they start by people, and you know, introducing themselves and what their current positions are. But part of the reality is that we're all in motion, you know, just like you're on the train. You know, we're all on the train, right? We're all in motion in some way. You know, I might be the CEO of a company today and I'm clear this is my role, but it doesn't mean I'm not wondering, like, okay, like, what's next in my life? Or what, you know, where are we going as a company? And gee, the strategy, we had this really great, clear strategy, but things have changed and I now need to meet where I am now in my life. I now need to meet where I am in my company. So this is this great, the process of finding clarity, the process of noticing the gaps, feeling the discomfort, and enjoying the ride too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing I've been thinking about as I was going through the book, you talk about the gaps, you talk about curiosity, which we'll get to in a second. But this idea of, okay, so finding clarity, there must be some anchors that can help, like things that you can, I'm not going to say rely on, but cultivate. So you talk about like the tending of the garden, right? Like, I mean, where I live, if you're not weeding consistently, then you won't weed because they'll just get out of control and then you will just let the garden go, right? Yeah. Whereas if, so you're, again, this is a practice to it. Hey, every day, like when I'm out barbecuing, I will pull some weeds because, hey, I don't want to deal with 43 weeds. I'd rather deal with 3 of them, right? Or 5 of them even, or whatever I can handle. So my question is, you know, routine, ritual, like, are these things that can be considered anchors? Like what, and maybe even to a further degree, what are some unconventional anchors that people can use to find clarity?
Yeah. The one that I think is of parallel to your metaphor about weeding is what I sometimes call the no festering rule, right? So in relationship, whenever there's something not quite aligned, when you notice there's an ouch, your feelings are hurt, there's some discomfort, those small things will get bigger and bigger if you don't tend to them. Those are like the weeds in our relationships. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, maybe unlike the weeds in our garden, we don't have to tend to every one of them, but we need to pay attention and we need to make decisions. And it's probably a good practice, you know, is a lot of this book, really, you know, and when we talk about accountability, it's dealing more skillfully with conflict.
Right.
Right. So there's, you know, we started out talking about the discomfort of all the transitions that we're in. But the subsets of those, the real meat of those is our inner conflicts, but really our conflicts in so much of what we're doing is with other those darn other people, you know. Well, but we need those other people. We rely on those other people, again, whether it's in our personal lives or our business lives.
That leads me to a really interesting, and it'll circle back to curiosity, because I'm a big fan of Ted Lasso. I love watching, I'm not alone. There's a lot of people that love that show. But I remember when I was going through the book, like Be Curious, Not Furious, I was thinking about that scene. I don't know if you've seen Ted Lasso, but the dart scene where, you know, he's made a bet with the owner's ex-husband, Rupert, and the quote from Walt Whitman, be curious, not judgmental. Mm-hmm. And it, to me, as we're talking, I was thinking about like the antagonist in the scene, Rupert, was so focused on the next thing that he wasn't curious enough, which led Ted to be able to say, hey, if you had asked me these questions, I would have been able to tell you this and you wouldn't have entered this bet. And Ted Lasso, I think as an example, is somebody who helps with his team as a character practice mm-hmm. compassionate accountability.
Yes.
So I loved it. Like, let's dig into that a little bit, because it's such a fascinating, and that's why he's such an endearing character to me. Starting an online business or expanding your physical storefront online has never been easier thanks to Shopify. This global commerce platform supports you at every stage of your business journey. From launching your online shop to managing a million orders, Shopify is there to simplify and accelerate your growth. It's not just about selling products. Shopify helps you manage every aspect of your business with their all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. But that's not all. Shopify helps you convert visitors into customers with the best converting checkout process on the internet, which performs up to 36% better than other platforms. And now, a special offer for my listeners. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/timecrafting, all lowercase. Whether you're just starting out or looking to scale up, Shopify is the perfect partner for your business. Are you a small business owner struggling to find the right talent for your team? I've been there, and I know how challenging it can be. That's why I recommend LinkedIn Jobs. It's not just any job board. It's a community where you can find professionals who are the perfect fit for your business, many of whom aren't checking other job sites. In fact, 70% of LinkedIn users aren't visiting other leading job sites, making LinkedIn your best bet for finding top talent. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can post your job and reach qualified candidates quickly. 86% of small businesses find a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And now you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/conversation. That's right, for free. Don't miss out on finding top talent. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/conversation today. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. Well, as you were saying that, I was thinking that I think one of the reasons that he's such an endearing character is because he has a good heart. Mm. He brings good-heartedness to competition, to winning. And he what he might be lacking in what we think of as conventional expertise or experience, he shows how much leverage there is in good-heartedness, even when it comes to things like winning mm-hmm. or competitiveness. So super interesting in that way, and how we're all drawn to that kind of, you know, again, it's almost like a way of being and how can we bring good-heartedness into our work and our lives. And I think, you know, in some way, the role of a leader is to help bring out, and which he does. Again, he brings out the good-heartedness in others, even the, you know, all of the, we get to see all of the gaps, the lack of good heart, or there is the deception. And he just is meeting it all with his own good heart and transforming it in very positive ways. He's great, a great role model that way.
And he also surrounds himself with people who know the game better than he does. Everybody else in that room knows the game more than he does.
Yes.
And he's okay with that. So how, and that's ego, casting aside ego. What role do you think ego plays, either in the in a positive or negative way? Because I mean, again, we can't discount the ego. It's part of it when it comes to this concept of not only compassion, accountability, but also like the ability to find clarity.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, he's a model, I think, of someone who has such a strong ego that he can let go of his ego. Right. This is, again, I think this is a core practice. That kind of you have to have enough confidence to be humble. You have to have enough confidence in yourself to surround yourself by people who are more skilled and knowledgeable than you are.
Right. Well, and then the other thing is in his personal life, he's not as confident. Like, he's definitely more. So we're all multitudes, right? So knowing that, Let's dig in a little bit more, because there's this quote that I love that I've used a lot. Thomas Merton: clarity affords focus. Mm-hmm. Why do people seemingly cast aside clarity and try to focus without being clear first? Like in your work, you've seen this. What is the trap that people fall into?
Yes, the trap of ego. It's the trap of, you know, it's interesting in my, my last book was called Seven Practices of a Mindful Leader. Mm-hmm. And the third practice is don't be an expert. And now I've often had to clarify that, of course, when it comes to, you know, my auto mechanic or my dentist or my surgeon, I want expertise, but it's just like what you were saying. It's in the realm of human emotions and human relationships. Again, whether at work or not at work, there's no expertise there. We all have to be open and learning about this realm of relationship, this realm of human, the human heart. Again, this is, I think, one of the most important qualities of, you know, of a leader or even any human, right? So it's interesting that in Ted Lasso that we get to see, you know, his life is a bit of a mess. Mm-hmm. And whose life isn't, really? I mean, you know,
true. Let's talk about listening. We had Oscar Trimboli on the show before. We'll link to that episode in the show notes, and about deep listening. And in the book, you talk about the role of listening. We don't spend enough time doing that. And I'd like to hear your thoughts as to why. And then secondly, why it's important and what role listening plays in the, especially the work that you do in relationship to the book.
Yeah. Well, I think of, you know, I used to do a lot of mindfulness trainings with engineers, Google engineers, engineers in all kinds of big companies. And in the work that I would do, they would sometimes say they needed to take their game faces off in order to practice, you know, mindfulness and emotional intelligence. And I think there's a sense that we're trained to be smart, or we're trained to have all the answers.
Right.
We're not trained to listen, right? There's not a kind of training to step back and be curious about, you know, what do other people have to contribute? Are there other ways to look at this? Might the way I'm looking at this not be the only way or even the best way? So again, I think this is that same question of habit and ego and fear can get in the way of listening, the practice of listening. And that it, in a paradoxical way, it takes a certain confidence, a certain kind of ego strength to actually let go of our own ego and be a really curious, and to listen with scale and depth, right? To listen right. widely and deeply.
So I want to shift gears for a minute and talk about the role of will in this. Okay. So there's been a lot of talk about willpower. You know, it doesn't exist, it doesn't work, et cetera. It's actually interesting. I was watching the Green Lantern movie again, which is not a great movie, but I think it's better than people give it credit for. And I was specifically pleased, I guess, to realize that they didn't mention the term willpower. They mentioned will. So like the Green Lantern's ring is powered by will, not willpower. And I realized that there is definitely a distinction as far as I'm concerned, and I don't think I'm alone, in will and willpower. So when it comes to the stuff that you're talking about in the book, the idea of, you know, again, compassionate, especially compassionate accountability, because there has to be, I would imagine there has to be a will or a willingness to do that. How does someone cultivate that so that it, I wouldn't say it's second nature, but the propensity to fall down is mm-hmm. lower because of the strength of will to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, the word will. You know, I was thinking of, connected to that is, for me, I like the word ambition.
Sure.
Like I'm a big proponent of whether you call it will or ambition or high motivation, right? To me, and again, this is like, I want people who are highly motivated to solve problems. Mm-hmm. I want people who are highly motivated even to access one's open heart, right? And even, you know, I also, in addition to a business person and entrepreneur, I'm a meditation teacher. And I describe that it takes a certain will or ambition and motivation to actually have a meditation practice, right? To clear the decks from the stream of activity and busyness and noise, to actually sit down in a quiet place, even for a few minutes. But once you enter that space, that's a time to let go of one's ambition. And so this is so interesting that it takes, I think, that kind of will or ambition to be able to stop. But once you're there, let it go.
Right.
Like be willing to put yourself in a space of where you don't know what's going to happen, where you can train yourself to let go of getting anything. Like to me, the practice of one of the ways that I think about meditation and even listening to a certain extent is like, what does it feel like if there's nothing lacking or nothing missing for me right now? How is that? How does that show up?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
this is the kind of listening.
Well, and managing passwords can be a real headache, right? Think about it. Every website requires a new password. Each one needs to be unique, secure, and somehow memorable. But there's a better way. Welcome to the world of 1Password, where your entire company can generate strong, unique passwords, store them securely, and access them across any device without ever needing a reset. Imagine never having to click Forgot Password again. With 1Password's award-winning design, managing passwords becomes a breeze for you and your entire team. It's trusted by millions, including top companies like IBM and Slack. Here's the best part. My listeners can try 1Password for free for 2 weeks. Right now, get your free trial at 1Password.com/productiveconvo. Secure your passwords and simplify your online security with 1Password.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
The idea of if you're ambitious is it's hard to cast that aside when you're like, everything's fine right now, right? Like everything's good. Fine's not even the right word, but everything's good. Well, wait a minute, but I'm ambitious. Shouldn't I want more? But do we? Do you? Does it? Like, I mean, it's such a, again, the multitudes aspect. It's another thing that's interesting and is the idea of turning breakdowns into breakthroughs. I think what can happen, I can actually give you an example that's happened recently. And by the time this is recording, this will have happened, but both of my team members that were part of my team in May are no longer on the team. They both, you know, they had other opportunities and so on and so forth. And it happened within, I kid you not, a 2 week span of each other. So we went from having Mike and his team to Mike and Keith, who's producing this episode, and that's the team. And it was, I could tell you that I wonder, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but my reaction a few years ago would have been, I need a drink or a knee jerk reaction to try to fix the problem in that moment. But I'm now, whether it's wisdom, maturity, a combination of those things, or even just an ability to, or a willingness to sit with something. As of right now, I have done nothing other than sit with it and slowly examine it. Not even deliberately like, let's make a list, or just, I'm just letting it percolate. And I wonder, That to me sounds a lot like turning what could be a breakdown into a breakthrough. I think there's part of that there. I'd love for you to expand on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm reminded of a similar episode in my life. You know, I was CEO founder of a publishing company many years ago, and I can remember feeling relaxed about, oh, I really had a good team. And it was like similar to what you're saying. It was like a Monday morning, and suddenly my team started disappearing. You know, one of my key people said, "Oh, you know, my father's not feeling well, and I've got to move back to the East Coast." And you know, my team in one day kind of fell apart. Now, I think I wasn't in the same kind of relaxed position because I needed to replace them. But having said that, you know, there was, I think part of the lesson was kind of accepting change, accepting things. In this case, in both of our cases, I think sometimes these things are not within our control.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, what can I learn from this? What do I need to do? You know, oh, this is a transition. This is a learning. You know, it might be hard, but again, it's that coming back to what we were saying earlier about our relationship with change. And the I kind of got from you that there's maybe some discomfort there.
Oh yeah, but you, yeah,
yeah. But you weren't. but I feel like you're neither overreacting. You're not beating yourself up, and you're not underreacting. You're not, you know, kind of suppressing that this is happening. No, this is happening, and now what?
Yeah.
Now what?
We talked earlier about, you know, being in perpetual motion, the train, all that stuff. It brings me back, and I know I've brought up, one scripted television show. I'm going to talk about a movie real quick here that I just watched not too long ago. I'm sure some listeners out there watched the movie Air, the new one that Ben Affleck directed about the Michael Jordan story. I don't know if you've seen it at all yet.
I just saw it.
Okay. So there's a scene, and spoiler alert, Michael Jordan did sign with Nike. there's a point where Matt Damon's character and Ben Affleck, who played Phil Knight, Matt Damon is waiting for Phil to return, and he comes back and he's wearing his running gear. And at the ultimate end of it was Phil decided, yeah, we're going to dedicate all of our resources to signing Michael. And Matt Damon's character, I think his name's Sonny, went, what helped you come to that decision? Because it didn't sound like you were going to go that way. He goes, I went for a run. Okay. So now remember, 1984, 85, he could have had a Walkman on. I don't remember seeing him in the scene doing that. Sometimes motion can help with clarity. Sometimes getting moving can help with that. So I'd love to hear somebody, because that was the other thing. I didn't do it yesterday because I was in the middle of some stuff, but that is a reaction I normally, that's something I will do, is like, let's go for a walk. Let's get moving, but with nothing between my ears other than what's in my head.
That's right. I mean, I do remember that scene from the movie, and it was like, I think the message was I went to the place where I could clear my mind and think, I could think differently, mm-hmm. right? I could get in my own way. And that was so brilliant in that we now see in retrospect how brilliant, you know, that decision was, and that he was against it, right? He did a 180 degree turnaround from what he thought he had decided to now he had become convinced of this strategy. Yeah, it's funny. I had a similar situation recently where I was being asked to consult on a strategy, and I was very clear about what I thought, and then somehow, you know, reality intervened. Mm-hmm. You know, we started experimenting with something that I really thought was a bad idea. Very similar in a way, I think, to that. But like, it's like, oh yeah. I need to let go of, you know, ego can be a very dangerous thing when it comes to our decisions, important decisions about direction and strategy, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, like, and I think this was, the message here was, I went for a walk and I could let go of my ego, my point of view. And man, we're now aligned.
Well, interestingly, I think the other thing that I take away from, again, finding and gaining clarity, like all of that stuff, is it's not, you don't have to sit and meditate for three days to get, you don't have to go on a retreat. You could go for a walk. You could go for a run. It does involve a pause for sure. I would imagine, or a stop. To what happened with Phil Knight is you mentioned he was in his space to do that. So that was almost like a pause, like a run for him is that pause. For people who live in a world, which is a lot of us, where progress is always about not stopping, keep going, move forward. What do you say to the person that's listening to this right now that's saying, I don't have time to take a breath, let alone, you know, because not all clarity, I would imagine, is from like just dead silence. That's not what it is. So I'd love to, can we dig into that a little bit?
Yeah. It's a story that I tell in my book. It's mm-hmm. the question that I'm most asked by Google engineers is, what is the least amount of time I can meditate and have it make a difference? And my, you know, and I think the question from them came from a science. It was, they wanted to know what science had to say, But they also were just curious, like, you know, like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
And my response came to be one breath, but one breath with full awareness every day. You know, and I think when it comes to these, you know, these stopping practices, start with one breath, literally, or like 1 minute or three. Like, I think everyone can find enough time for, certainly for a breath or a minute or two. But really, you know, mindfulness practice, or it doesn't mean you have to slow down.
Right.
It's really bringing awareness, you know, right in the midst of whatever we're doing, whatever the pace is. But we do need to, it is the practice of noticing what you're feeling, noticing what you're thinking, having enough space to be curious about what's happening around you, even if the train's moving pretty fast.
Mark, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for joining me. The book is called Finding Clarity. Where can people pick up the book, and where can they keep up with the work you're doing?
A book can be found anywhere, you know, anywhere books are sold. It's out in some bookstores now, which I'm pleased about. And my website, you can find out about my work. It's marklesser.net, marklesser.net. Lots of writing and talks and lots of information on my website. And appreciate having this time with you.
Thanks again for having a productive conversation with me today, Mark. Big thanks to Mark for joining me today on the program. You can find all of the related material that we discussed, links, takeaways, all that fun stuff in the show notes at productivityist.com/podcast486. And if you want to support the show, there are a couple of ways that you can do that right out of the gate. And I'm going to give you a third special way to support the work that I do in general. So first off, if you want to support the show, check out our sponsors at productivityist.com/podcast sponsors. Some of the ones you heard today will be listed on that page. And if you check out what they offer, they'll know that I sent you there. Secondly, subscribe to the show. That way you don't miss a single episode of what's to come. It's easy to do in whatever podcast app you're using right now, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, what have you. Just subscribe to the show. That way you don't miss a single episode, and you can choose to listen to the ones that really resonate with you, and then the ones that don't, you know, just don't. That's fine. And finally, here's that bonus way you can support the work that I do, which includes the podcast. Just subscribe to my email newsletter. In fact, when you do that, there's free goodies that you'll get. I have right now, as we're listening to this, I have a time crafting starter kit. I also have a daily planning sheet called the Daily Driver. All you need to do is visit productivityist.com/attention, subscribe, and you'll be good to go. You'll get lots of great content weekly from me. My writing is the thing that I really enjoy doing, and I'd love to share it with you. So there you go. Three ways that you can support the show and keep the productive conversation going. That's it for this episode. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.